Palestinian woman who was injured in Israel's last month at Russian and Gaza dies of her wounds. Diana Yazir's two girls were killed in Israeli strikes. The leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement calls for Muslims' mobilization to remove Israel from Palestinian lands. The World Health Organization warning Africa, already hit by a fresh surge of COVID infections, is not ready to face a third wave of the deadly pandemic. This is World News. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. A Palestinian woman has died of the injuries she sustained during Israel's last month aggression on the Gaza Strip. Palestinian media identified a victim as Diana Yazji, a mother of two girls who were also killed in Israeli bombardments. Early in the day, a young man who was wounded during the onslaught also succumbed to his injuries. The deaths bring to nearly 260. The number of Gazans who lost their lives in the 11 days of Israel's air, land, and sea strikes. At least 66 of those killed were kids. According to Gaza's health ministry, over 1,900 people were also injured before a ceasefire took effect on May the 21st. Let's go live to Gaza City. Ashraf Shan, our correspondent, is there. Ashraf, this death toll, unfortunately, is going up despite the fact that some time is passing since the truce came into effect.
Well, there is a heavy, a young Palestinian woman, a mother, died of the wounds sustained during the Israeli bombardment of one of the buildings in the Gaza City, where the street bombings, that massacre that claimed the lives of more than 60 people, including the two little girls of that woman, Diane Aliazji. She died after sustaining severe injuries following the heavy bombardments of Israeli fighter jets to a residential area, the same way Israeli fighter jets carried out hundreds of air raids against the 2 million inhabitants of Gaza, killing and maiming as many as possible of the people in this tiny and blockaded enclave, while at the same time Israel continues to block the entry of humanitarian supplies. It also continues to cause a lot of pain and suffering for the families, not only those who lost their lives, but also who lost their livelihoods because of the ongoing Israeli blockade and daily bombardments that lasted for 11 days in the Gaza Strip.
All right, thank you for that. Ashraf Shannon, our correspondent in Gaza City. Israeli opposition parties have announced that they have reached an agreement to form a coalition cabinet, and that means an end to Prime Minister Netanyahu's 12 years in office. Palestinians, however, are saying that they don't expect any change in Israel's policy under the new cabinet. Mona Kendall reports from the occupied West Bank.
Yair Lapid, the leader of Israeli opposition Yesh Atid party, informed the Israeli president that he can form a coalition cabinet. This brings to an end the era of long-term Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Under the coalition agreement, Lapid will share power with head of the right-wing Yamina, Naftali Bennett, who would be Netanyahu's immediate replacement. For the Palestinians, however, Netanyahu's removal would be no improvement, especially that the coming Prime Minister Bennett, who was a former settler leader, rejects Palestinian statehood. Palestinian officials say they expect Bennett's cabinet will even be more extreme than Netanyahu's.
For us, this coalition cabinet that was declared to replace Netanyahu's radical cabinet is even more radical when it comes to Israel's policies towards Palestinians. It will seek to expand settlements in the occupied lands. We trust none of Israeli parties. Their policy towards Palestinians won't be different.
Experts say that for the time being, Netanyahu's successors with their disparate agendas are expected to leave contentious issues unresolved. According to them, Bennett doesn't believe in a solution to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. His aim instead is to take full control of Palestinians. Moreover, they say, Bennett has some red lines he will never cross. He has long championed the right of settlement in the West Bank.
There is a consensus among all far-right parties when it comes to policies towards Palestinians. The two parties have already agreed to keep Area C of the West Bank under their control, which makes up almost 58% of the West Bank. The new cabinet will press ahead with the annexation plan, which is part of the so-called deal of the century.
Under the coalition agreement, Bennett and Lapid would rotate the role of prime minister, with Bennett taking up the post for the first 2 years and Lapid the final two. Experts say Netanyahu will not let it go easily, as the parliament still has about 12 days to swear in the cabinet. During this period, Netanyahu will do his utmost to convince enough right-wing lawmakers to vote against the new cabinet. Mona Kandil, Occupy Ramallah.
A report by France's defense minister indicates that Saudi Arabia was the biggest buyer of French arms in 2020. Riyadh purchased more than 700 million euros worth of weapons from Paris last year, far more than any other country. France has been widely criticized for selling arms to the Arab Kingdom, which has been waging a war on Yemen. Rights groups, including Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, accuse Riyadh of violating international law and inflicting devastating harm on civilians. 6 years of relentless Saudi onslaught has killed tens of thousands of Yemenis, mostly civilians, pushing millions more on the brink of starvation. The leader of Yemen's Ansar movement has urged all Muslim nations to mobilize to remove Israel from occupied Palestinian lands. In a speech, Abdul Malik al-Houthi stressed that Palestinian-Lebanese resistance fronts have inflicted many defeats on Israel. The Ansar chief praised Iran as the main supporter of resistance in the region. He stated that the Palestinian resistance achieved a clear victory against Israel in the regime's 11-day onslaught on Gaza. Houthi accused the United States and Israel of using Takfiri terrorists to divide Muslim nations. He said that those who collaborate with Washington and Tel Aviv are committing crimes against the people in the region. The Yemeni leader also warned foreign aggressors to stop killing the innocent people in his country. The World Health Organization says Africa is not ready for an imminent third wave of COVID-19, warning that the threat of a new wave in the continent is real and rising. The WHO Regional Director for Africa warned that many African hospitals are still far from ready to cope with a hike in the number of critically ill patients. Machadiso Moeti also called for better equipment for hospitals and medical staff. According to WHO, the essential health facilities and personnel required to manage critically ill COVID patients are inadequate in many African countries. Of 20 countries surveyed, most had less than one intensive care unit bed per 100,000 people. Africa has logged over 4.8 million COVID cases, which makes up nearly 3% of global cases, with some 130,000 deaths. Oslo summons the U.S. embassy's top official to lodge an official protest over Washington's espionage on Norwegian and other European leaders. Norway's defense minister also stated that he held a meeting with the U.S. embassy in Oslo earlier on Thursday, making it clear that spying on allies is unacceptable. The U.S. embassy in Oslo is currently without an ambassador. On Sunday, Danish media released a report that Denmark's Secret Service helped the U.S. spy on European politicians between 2012 and 2014. Intelligence was allegedly collected on other senior officials from France, Germany, Norway, and Sweden. European governments have demanded explanations from Washington over the allegations. Well, that's it for my part of this news broadcast. Let's go to the editor's studio. Let's see what Omid has for you in his special election coverage.
Hello and welcome to another edition of 2021 Election Specials. Good to have you with us. Iranian presidential candidate Mohsen Rezaei has criticized former and current administrations for adopting wrong economic policies. Rezaei says such measures have led to economic hardships the Iranian people have been dealing with for years.
The past decade has been the decade of missed opportunities. Our average economic growth over the past decade has been zero. The average inflation rate in the past decade has been 24%, with the last 3 years being the worst part of it. The average growth of gross fixed capital in the past decade has been minus 5%. This shows that our economy has been shrinking.
Rezaei was addressing Iranian business people as part of his presidential campaign. He said the first thing to do is to avoid such mistakes, adding that Iranians should not allow previous governments to be reelected. The presidential candidate warned that the country will head to a point where it can never return if policies of the current administration are adopted by the next. The 66-year-old politician also called for unity among Iranians so that they will be able to overcome the country's economic crisis. Iranian presidential candidate Ebrahim Raisi has outlined his plan for the next 4 years in a new appearance on the national TV. He says he will put an end to corruption and economic rent in the country. Raisi says prosecution of the judiciary should be the last resort.
The judiciary entering the fray is a last resort, and if the country's laws are reformed, the judicial apparatus would not need to enter at all. Merely proceeding with legal cases and confronting wrongdoers will not eradicate corruption. The mechanisms need to be set right. Rent and corruption aggravate people, and we will end rent and corruption in the country. Everywhere in the world, only security matters are confidential. All other matters need to be made known to the people. State contracts need to be transparent to everyone.
The Iranian presidential candidate Alireza Zakani says the United States uses sanctions as an instrument against other countries. He says the U.S. will not be able to do such a thing against Iran if the Islamic Republic strengthens its economy.
America uses sanctions as a strategic tool, and it will never stop doing so. Iran can neutralize the bans through the benefits of economic ties with its 15 neighbors. If it remains susceptible to sanctions, they will break our neck. But if we drive the economy toward confrontation with the sanctions, they won't be able to do anything about it. There are many ways for Iran to overcome the sanctions. However, the current economic situation stems from the ineptitude of some authorities who see a resolution of the problem solely in ties with the U.S. and Europe.
Iran's presidential candidates are outlining their plans ahead of the June 18 election. This as people are weighing up who can be the most qualified candidate to run the country in the next 4 years. At a moment, what seems to be the issue of very high significance for people is the candidate's foreign policy agenda. We are going to take a look at how the presidential hopefuls are planning to deal with the rest of the world now. Former central bank governor of Iran, Abdel Nasser Hemati. He says he would work to boost Iran's foreign policy, which he says will be based on de-escalation of tensions. Hemati has also vowed to get the Financial Action Task Force, or FATF, passed in the Expediency Council if elected president. Next, Mohsen Mehralizadeh, who previously served as Iran's vice president, says boosting bilateral and multilateral relations with Iran's neighbors is part of his agenda. The 64-year-old candidate says boosting Iran's economy is possible amid sanctions. He has called for a development-oriented foreign policy. Here's more.
Development-oriented foreign policy will be one of the priorities of my government. This means that the foreign policy will focus on contributing to economic policies and lead to an increase in domestic production and end to any hurdles in the way of exports. We may have minor problems with some neighboring countries, but we should mend ties for the sake of domestic economic development.
Another contender for Iran's presidency is Saeed Jalili. Saeed Jalili has served as Iran's top nuclear negotiator. The 55-year-old says his foreign policy approach mainly focuses on anti-Iran sanctions. Jalili says lifting sanctions, circumventing the measures, and rendering them ineffective for good are issues to be addressed. Now let's move on. Another candidate that I am going to talk about is Ebrahim Raisi. He is also running for president. He has outlined his foreign policy agenda, saying his plans are based on principles such as honor, wisdom, and expediency set out by the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Raisi says four major points his administration will try to address include the Iran nuclear deal or the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, Iran's regional influence, economic diplomacy, and last but not least, targeted foreign relations. He also says he intends to have better interaction with the world. Let's take a listen.
With your help and through strong diplomacy, we can establish good relations with the regional countries and raise the volume of our exports to the neighbors to the best level. We believe in interactions with the entire world in order to solve the country's economic issues, but the regional countries should be a priority.
Another candidate for the top executive post, Amir Hossein Ghazizadeh Hashemi, says the main focus of his government will be to establish and boost trade relations with African and Latin American countries. He also says his administration will make the best use of foreign assets to improve the economy. Another presidential hopeful, Mohsen Rezaei, he has stressed the need to strengthen ties with Iran's immediate neighbors and other regional countries in order to improve the economy. The presidential candidate has vowed to work hard for democratic institutions and invoke optimism among people that their votes count. Here's more.
We will adopt a regional diplomacy, and our foreign policy will focus more on regional countries. Foreign policy is successful if it boosts Iran's economy and increases Iranians' annual income.
Yet another candidate in the race, Alireza Zakani, who is currently serving as member of Iranian parliament, says foreign policy is the fourth axis of his plan. Zakani says he wants to turn Iran as a role model for the region. The 56-year-old candidate says foreign policy must be adopted to bring dignity, adding that it is also very important to use the capacity of Iranians abroad.
In future foreign policy, you will see that equations will quickly change. As part of active smart diplomacy, the capacities of the region, the neighbors, the resistance front, and the emerging powers can be used while paying special attention to ties with the East, besides properly dealing with the West.
The candidates are scheduled to appear in three live televised debates to outline their plans for the next 4 years. The Commission for Presidential Candidates Campaigns has set three dates for the live debates between the hopefuls on Iran's national television. The first debate is going to be aired on Saturday, June the 5th, and the two others on Tuesday, June the 8th, and Saturday, June the 12th. The seven candidates will be given equal time to discuss their plans and answer the questions asked by the moderator in three-hour forums. Press TV will be broadcasting these three debates live. Well, that's a wrap for now. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Okay, that was Amit with the special election coverage. And that brings us to the end of this news broadcast from Tehran. Thank you for being with us.
Here at IRIB English Radio express our heartfelt condolences to all of our listeners. On the 32nd anniversary of the passing away of the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul.
Albino baby elephant that was rescued from poachers in South Africa has found a new home with a welcoming herd. The calf, named Khan Yisa, was caught in a snare in the Kruger National Park when she was only 4 months old. She suffered several nasty wounds, including one to her mouth. Khan Yisa remained trapped in the snare for 4 days before being rescued and taken to a shelter especially built for elephants northeast of Johannesburg. All the other elephants there are orphans too.
Each female that we had has a baby. So except for them, all of the others are orphaned. And I think that is part of the reason why they accept these orphans, because they know how it feels, you know, and they become actually, you know, the mother figures for them.
The calf has learned to adapt to the new life. She lies under the shadow cast by bigger elephants to protect herself from getting sunburned. The shelter says if the herd grows too big for the area, she and other elephants will be released into the wild. A Brazilian artist has found a way to reuse plastic bags in a very creative way, making something beautiful out of them. Eduardo Sroa turns recycled shreds of plastic into real pieces of artwork. He picks up the material from city streets and rivers. Without using a drop of paint, Sroa recreates paintings by Picasso, Van Gogh, and other famous artists. He says his goal is to draw attention to plastic pollution.
I present this series as a product that does not have paint, except for what has already been processed into plastic by the industry. It does not have glue. It is a box that was built, and inside I press and condense it. I make an accumulated cluster of plastic bags that ends up creating this image that you see.
Sura's exhibition is due to open in Sao Paulo in the coming months. His previous works were also aimed at raising awareness about the environment. He has created several giant installations in public places, mostly along polluted rivers.
Chinese archaeologists have unearthed a rare 3,000-year-old bronze figure from a site they have been excavating for months in Sichuan province. The 1.5-meter figure, deemed one of China's most famous archaeological discoveries, it consists of two parts. The upper part is 55 centimeters high, with a zoon, a vessel used in ancient times, on top of the head. The lower part is 60 centimeters in size, with kneeling posture. Similar findings in the past were just 20 centimeters in their heights. The bronze figure was discovered under massive ivory objects. So far, over 500 objects, including ivory, bronze, gold, and jade ware, have been found from six sacrificial pits of the Sanjiangdu ruins. A Chinese man becomes the first blind Asian mountaineer to successfully scale the world's tallest peak, the Mount Everest. Zhang Hong completed the 8,849-meter high Himalayan feat with three high-altitude guides. The 46-year-old climber said he spent much of his trek holding onto his guide's arm. The pair said the most tiresome and risky areas were the so-called death zones, ice walls, and ice falls at around 8,000 meters. The Chinese climber recalled humbly embracing being part of Mother Nature after he completed his arduous journey.
No matter if you're disabled or normal, whether you have lost your eyesight or you have no legs or hands, it doesn't matter. As long as you have a strong mind, you can always complete anything that other people think you can't.
Zhang added that this is only the beginning. He said his next milestone is climbing the highest peaks from the world's continents known as the Seven Summits. The Chinese mountaineer lost his eyesight at the age of 21. After his success, he became the third visually impaired person to ever step foot on the Everest peak. A Russian company has developed a fully self-driving car that looks like it was taken right out of a sci-fi movie. Flip is the size of a conventional passenger car and has enough space for six people. Its creator says the advanced vehicle is a taxi of the future. Flip has fulfilled the requirements of international automated driving standards. It's powered by electricity, but it can also use other fuels like gas and hydrogen. The owners of this futuristic vehicle do not have to worry about running out of power. That's because its replaceable batteries can be changed in less than 5 minutes once they're out of electricity. A rare baby giraffe is born in a zoo in western France as conservationists try to increase the population of this endangered species. The cute Rothschild giraffe is the second born in a French zoo this year. Caretakers say the cubs will stay with the facility for 1 year before they would be sent to another site to start their own families. The Rothschild giraffes are critically endangered, and conservationists say that only 1,600 of them exist now. The general giraffe populations in the wild have also decreased by around 30% in the last 3 decades.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
For many professional climbers, ascending Mount Everest for even once remains an almost distant dream. However, a Nepali man has achieved that feat not once or twice, but 25 times. Kami Rita Sherpa has arrived back in the capital, Kathmandu, after breaking his own whopping record of 24 ascents to the summit of the world's tallest mountain. The veteran climber hopes that his accomplishment represents a big achievement for his small country. Climbing tall mountains runs in Kami's blood. He belongs to the Sherpa tribe, one of the Tibetan ethnic groups and native to the most mountainous region of Nepal.
Iconic Eiffel Tower in Paris has been illuminated for the first time using electricity produced from certified renewable hydrogen. In an amazing show, hydrogen-generated lights were projected onto the tower's frames, displaying various patterns and designs, making viewers ecstatic. It's a dream project of a French company based in the city of Saint-Malo. The company wanted to make the most recognizable landmark a showcase for its carbon-free technology. The objective is to bring more awareness of renewable energy to the public. The nightly event will continue until May the 30th. Countries around the world are investing a lot to develop hydrogen-related technologies. A French musician helps patients in an end-of-life care home to escape from pain by playing the cello for them. Let's have a listen.
Music soothes pain as music eases their symptoms. In palliative care, in end-of-life care, there is sometimes still pain in spite of the morphine, in spite of the drugs that really help manage the pain of the patients. They still feel pain, and music really has a calming power on the residual pain of palliative care patients.
The sound of Claire Oppert's solo cello resonates through the rooms of Jean Garnier End-of-Life Care Home in southern Paris on Fridays. She plays for patients who suffer from physical pain as well as terminal illnesses. The center's staff say music lightens patients' moods and puts them in a calm state.
After Claire leaves the room, we find the patients in a calm state, at times moved, at times happy. A lot happens. There are moments of tears, moments of joy. When we go into the room, we find there is an encounter with the person and his or her story.
I'm in permanent pain. The music helps a little to escape from the pain, I think. You pay attention to the music, and if it's a piece you know, you anticipate the next note. There you go, it's like that.
Claire has been playing the cello for patients in end-of-life care for almost a decade. She says the fact that music makes people feel good has been known since the beginning of humanity, but today it needs to be proven scientifically. Therefore, she has made it her mission to demonstrate the therapeutic effects of music on patients by taking medical studies.
The Russian zoo is delighted to welcome a new resident, a rare snow white wallaby. The cute joey named Elisa was born at Regina Zoo in the southwestern city of Kazan. Zookeepers say she is healthy, playful, and has won the visitors' attention. Interestingly enough, Elisa's brother Alec was born with normal pigmentation. Wallabies are members of the kangaroo family. The albino wallaby, which has no skin pigmentation and pink eyes, is believed to be extremely rare. Circus and lab animals are getting a second shot at life after a Frenchman built a sanctuary using his own private funds. The sanctuary houses some large animals like rescued lions, elephants and hippos, but it's also home to some lab creatures that were kept for scientific studies, such as the macaques. Circus and lab animals are usually euthanized if they are not rescued. Onan Sanctuary investor Patrick Viola says every day he takes numerous phone calls from circus owners asking about free space at his shelter.
More than a zoo, this is a shelter. It is a refuge above all for animals that need it when there is no other solution. You know, we get 5 to 6 calls every day. Fortunately, in 90% of cases, our help is not even needed. You can't just call us and say, hey, I have a horse, I don't want it anymore. There are plenty of other options. We put a lot of people in touch with each other. People who look for animals and people who have animals they need taken care of. We accommodate animals when there is really no other solution.
Patrick says his shelter is one of 3 sanctuaries that are able to look after wild animals and the only one with the space capacity. He said he's planning an extension as a bill aimed at phasing out the use of wild animals in circuses passes through Parliament. Based on government figures, there are some 80 traveling circuses in France. The ban will be phased in over 5 years once the legislation comes into effect. First a hobby and now a money-making career. A Chinese artist creates objects out of wool felt in a studio in Beijing.
I came across pictures about wool felt art online by chance. I was very interested in this kind of material, so I did some research and started to try to make something. I've been doing it for about more than 10 years now. I didn't expect that I could do it for such a long time. At first, it was just a little hobby. I wouldn't have thought that I would do it as a profession.
Yin's current exhibition is themed on a warm sense of family unit depicted by cute and cozy mushroom-headed figures. One features a small mushroom-headed family, another features a life-sized adult and child with the same shape. Other artworks include plants and animals, but whatever the creations are, they are infused with human emotions, making people feel good. That's what the 31-year-old Chinese artist says. So far, she has been part of 9 exhibitions in China and Japan.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In memory of a magnetic man. The 14th of the Iranian month of Khordad, falling on Friday, 4th of June this year, is indeed a doleful day. It is the day when the Islamic Republic of Iran was orphaned with the departure from this mortal world of its founder. It is the day when 32 years ago, millions of mournful Iranians gave a fitting farewell to the person who rescued them from domestic hegemony and foreign hegemony. The person, whose arrest in 1963 had triggered the 15th of Khordad or the 5th of June uprising, left for his heavenly abode on the eve of the 26th anniversary of this event that changed Iran's destiny. He, however, did not leave Iran, Iranians, and the world's oppressed in the dark. He bequeathed to them a rich and lasting legacy, and an able successor, who continues to be the hope and support of all aspirants to truth, social justice, and independence. This was the father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, whose mausoleum, though empty this year of the usual multitudinous gatherings because of the coronavirus pandemic, continues to rule the hearts of not just the Iranian nation, but of conscientious masses throughout the world. A magnetic personality, he needs no introduction. Born in 1902 in the town of Khomein in central Iran, to the local religious leader, Sayyid Mustafa Musavi al-Hindi, he was named Ruhullah in honor of Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him, whom Muslims hail as the Spirit of God. He lost his father early on in life, but like all great men, strove with faith in God and self-confidence to acquire knowledge, piety, patience, prudence, and skills in management that continued to contribute to his lasting legacy and charisma, although he's no longer in our midst physically. His uprising against tyranny, exile to Turkey and from there to Iraq, and return home in triumph in February of 1979 as the leader of the Islamic Revolution are all vivid in our memories. His determination defeated an armed-to-the-teeth regime, although he did not carry any weapon with him. When circumstances made him assume charge of Iran, he was already an accomplished scholar, a leading jurisprudent, a Gnostic of the highest order, who, with reliance upon God during the 10 years he was at the helm of the affairs until his departure from this mortal world in June of 1989, completely transformed Iran into a strong, dignified and truly independent country, capable of resisting the plots and pressures of the arrogant powers. This makes us recall a famous hadith mentioned in Bihar al-Anwar, the Hadith Encyclopedia, from Imam Musa Kazem, peace be upon him. A man from Qom will rise up and invite people towards truth. Around him will gather people like slabs of iron resolve, who will stand firm against strong winds and storms, and will never get tired of war. They know not fear, and have trust in Allah. The outcome is for the pious. A study of this statement expressed over a millennium and 2 centuries ago by an infallible Imam, Imam Musa Kazem, peace be upon him, shows that no such event had occurred in Qom throughout all these centuries, until 1963, when Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, raised his voice against the godless Pahlavi regime. The Pahlavi regime was installed by the British and backed to the hilt by the Americans in order to keep the Muslim nation of Iran in thrall. True to the words of this hadith, if the despots and the hegemonic powers quaked at the uprising of this man of God, the seekers of truth responded to his call and rallied to his side with iron resolve to establish a model Islamic government of the modern era, and to heroically defend it for 8 years during the war that the United States has imposed on Iran through his stooge, Saddam of the Ba'athist minority regime in Baghdad. He was not a cult leader, nor did he aspire to become one, and neither do those who keep alive his memory are trying to make a demigod out of him. In fact, as should be clear, this humble scholar of the school of the Ahlul Bayt of the Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, put into practice the heritage of Islamic learning and strove to enlighten mankind with higher humanitarian ideals and values, which are conspicuously absent in bodies and souls burdened with animal instincts and traits. This was where the iconoclast came into open conflict with the materialistic West, especially the great Satan, the United States, and its blinkered vision of life and culture. This was where godless capitalism floundered against Islamic resurgence. The 19th century had seen the indefatigable Sayyid Jamaluddin Asadabadi hounded across countries and continents by the British and their surrogates for his efforts to resuscitate Muslim societies with the spirit of pan-Islamism. But here was Imam Khomeini and his followers of iron resolve frustrating every sinister plot to tarnish the image of Islam that devilish minds could conceive. The man who foresaw the doom of communism and whose dynamic decree hangs like the sword of Damocles on the head of apostasy has also spoken of his views on economy, on politics, on arts, industry, culture, science and religion, all of which function as an integrated whole in human life.
Uh-huh.
perhaps Iran may not have yet reached the ideal stage of a truly Islamic state, as desired by Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul. But the change he wrought has been positively profound, with society cleansed of all vestiges of acts and practices that are considered open violation of the principles of Sharia law. Imam Khomeini took dynamic steps to uplift the status of women and restore to Iranian women their dignity, which the Pahlavi regime had brutally trampled upon by exposing their delicate feminine features to the plots and brazen attacks of depraved Western culture. He focused on solidarity by building the bridge of Islamic Unity Week to span the 12th and 17th of the month of Rabiul Awwal, the 2 days regarded by the two main sects of Islam, respectively, as the birthday of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. He declared the last Friday of the fasting month of Ramadan as International Quds Day in order to garner support for Islam's first Qibla, that is, the city of Bayt al-Muqaddas, which is under Zionist occupation. He issued the historic verdict against apostasy when the Indian-born British apostate, Salman Rushdie, with the backing of the West and the Zionists, dared to deride the sacred tenets of Islam. Perhaps one of the most brilliant measures of Imam Khomeini was the concept of Walayat al-Faqih, or governance of the supreme jurisprudent, in the physical absence of the Imam of the age, the Holy Prophet's 12th and last successor, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, to establish a global government of peace, prosperity and justice. What Muslim philosophers such as Abu Nas Farabi had envisioned in their writings on the concept of the perfect state and the ideal ruler for human societies, and what God-fearing religious scholars or ulama and the pious believers had yearned for in every age, Imam Khomeini proceeded to give perfection to these rudiments of the rule of the righteous as the concept of Walayat al-Faqih, or the rule of the supreme jurisprudent. It was his conviction that authority in state matters was not the prerogative of the infirm in faith, the unprincipled, the immoral, and the unjust. And on the basis of the hadith, that the fuqaha are the true heirs of the prophets. Today, Sayyid Ruhollah Khomeini is no longer with us, but his thoughts and ideas are very much alive, especially the blueprint of Islamic government, which has all the characteristics of a catalyst for aspiring Muslim countries. It is this magnetism that gains new adherents every day around the world and sends shivers down the spine of those masquerading as defenders of democracy and human rights. Condolences to all on the passing away anniversary of the father of the Islamic Revolution.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.